What you are about to hear now is the second degree of torture, zombie takeout. Hello and welcome to episode 463 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
Gonna be an interesting night, folks. I've gotten back to drinking coffee. I didn't touch it for years. I love coffee. had some this afternoon. The caffeine started wearing off about 45 minutes ago.
Oh, wow. You know, if I have it late in the afternoon, I'm going for too long.
No, the caffeine started wearing off. I just had a piece of dark chocolate to see if I could give myself a boost, and it worked, but a little too well. So, it'll be interesting. Before we get to this week's movie, a few things to cover. First off, I want to apologize for the Mexican slur that I used last week during our Cloud Atlas episode while I was quoting a scene from the movie. I never would have done that with any of the instances of the N-word in the film without censoring it. I shouldn't have done it with that. Won't happen again.
And I'm sorry, I didn't notice. How shitty that of me.
I didn't catch it until I was listening to the show back the next day after it went out. And, oh, fuck, I need to apologize for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, because you were just quoting the movie, so it was just kind of like, yeah, like, it was kind of shitty in the movie, too, honestly. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's no excuse. Like I said, I never would have done that with the N-word. So I shouldn't have done that. Also, with regard to Cloud Atlas, Bodo left us a voicemail, but frankly, it's the last week of the year. I have serious senioritis. You're lucky this episode has music at the top and bottom.
We are limping our way to the other finish crawling. Line here.
I'm doing that one hand crawl thing, drag, you know, So I'm just going to summarize what Bodo said. He gave Cloud Atlas a 4, barely gave it a 4, said it could have been a lot better, and compared it to Blackadder, which is absolutely fair.
And man, you know, I should apologize because I was so bent on a Bosom Buddy reference for a joke that I fucking forget Tom Hanks was in Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah.
The obvious joke. And I
didn't you have a Forrest Gump reference?
I texted it to you like after.
Oh, that's right. That's
the
right.
Day after. Because it was like 12 hours later, and I think of Forrest Gump prequel and sequel.
And to be honest, I didn't even connect Tom Hanks. I'm just like, okay, yeah, I get the reference because of the time thing. I didn't even think about Tom Hanks. That's actually a lot funnier now that you mentioned
it. Right. It was just like, and here I was in the, you know, the 1840s.
Yeah.
And now here's my descendants in the future.
Speaking of David Mitchell, the author of Cloud Atlas, after that episode, I went back to listening to his latest book, Utopia Avenue. Brilliant. Highly recommend it. It's about a band, basically the rise and fall of a band in the 60s, with some interesting elements. There are two groups of warring immortals in the two prior books, Bone Clocks and Slate House. There's a subplot in Utopia Avenue that involves them. Louisa Ray from Cloud Atlas has a cameo. It's interesting.
Okay.
Although if you're going to start with Mitchell, I would recommend either Cloud Atlas, which most people would say is his best, or Black Swan Green, which is definitely his most accessible. It's his most normal. And finally, before we get to this week's movie, of course, because it's the end of the year, our best and worst list.
Well, there might be a spoiler, but okay.
Okay. Well, if this week's movie is on one of the year lists, that's not really a spoiler.
Can you guess which one?
I'm actually not sure because it could have gone either way for me, to be honest. Starting with worst.
Okay.
Number 5. I mean, we're only doing 5 for worst because for me, if I went to 10, I would have been putting 3s on there, and that's not fair.
I was firmly in ones.
Oh, wow.
I looked at our Google Doc that we use to keep track of this.
Mm-hmm.
It has a running average of our scores,
Oh, I need to look at that. Yeah, I don't have the link for
like
that.
the all-time average in it.
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure you're on it. So we're very close. You're more generous to
Of course.
movies. Like your average is a little over 3.6.
As you said many years ago, I'm the easy grader.
And I'm just a little over 3.4.
Okay, so it's actually closer than I would have
It
thought.
is. That's our all-time average since episode one.
Wow.
It just keeps running, you know,
Yeah.
it's got the column.
Anyway, my number five, Conan the Barbarian. A very overhyped movie that really just didn't do much. Number four, Killer Pinata. I feel like that whole trilogy just kind of progressively sank. The Carousel 2 was brilliant. Armageddon was good. Killer Pinata. Sort of the Valiant, that horrible fantasy trilogy that misguided fantasy trilogy that I wanted to do, just again just got progressively worse. And the top two, no surprise, two, Tusk. One of your perspective titles had t a Tusk mentioned in it. I was like, no, the less said about Tusk, the better. And number one, nobody should be surprised by this, House 4.
Let's see. The guys that did not make my bottom five would be House 3 and Dark Crystal, but they were also close because they were given ones also.
Okay.
But yeah, five would be House 4 for me. Yeah, why did we do that to ourselves to start the year off? Four, a movie that we're about to review.
Okay. Interesting.
Three would be Tusk, which I had similar feelings, but I felt the movie we're about to review had a little bit more redeeming, but they're, I mean, pretty close.
This will be an interesting episode.
Number two, Cats. One of the
Not surprised.
worst, yeah, just horrific. And I believe number one of the worst movies ever made, Jaws 4.
Okay, yeah, I was looking at our ratings and it was like it just escaped my list. I think I gave it a 3 and I saw you gave it a 0, so yeah, obviously that
Yes.
was going to be a worst.
That just a horrendous movie that is just I mean, you just it just boggles the mind how it was made or when they were making it, what they were doing. I mean, they were just on vacation, most likely just getting stoned in the
And
islands.
actually, given that last point, if you go back and listen to that one, anyone, pay attention to how I say the name of the male lead.
Okay.
Because I don't pronounce it as written. It's a bit of a joke. On to our best list. At 10, we're doing 10 this one because it was a really good year, particularly for
Oh
me.
my God.
I had
Yeah, I've got
seven.
like four like honorable mentions there too.
I have seven fives. But
Wow.
starting with the four and a halves, the few four and a halves I had to use, Young Frankenstein. Classic, but just didn't quite hit the mark, or just didn't quite live up to my memory. Number nine, Hackers. Loved it since the 90s. It still holds up for me. Number eight, surprisingly, Cloud Atlas. If you told me at the start of this year that that would be on my best of the year list, I'd have been surprised. I'd have been shocked. Now on to my fives, Star Crash. I always have to have that one that you didn't like. I'm
I
surprised it
was kind
didn't
of
make.
like, really? That one?
I'm surprised it didn't make your bottom list.
No.
Number six, Miami Connection. I think most of the rest we're gonna agree on.
Yeah.
Number five, this is gonna be the odd one out. Castle of Cagliostro, Miyazaki,
That
Lupin the
was
Third.
close. That was close.
Okay. Number four, Band Called Death. Number three, Carousel 2. Actually, by the way, Death, one of two people who appear on both lists, best of list for the hearing and Zombie Takeout.
Yeah.
Number three, Carousel 2. I don't know if it's better than the original, but it's close. Number two, Nowhere In. And number one, the best movie we've ever reviewed, I think, Network.
Network. Yeah, that's spoiling mine too, of course. So, guys that just didn't make the list for me, The First House, Conan, Flesh and Blood, and Killer Pinata, just, a lot of them were just fun movies that I'd recommend seeing.
Two on my worst list. That's interesting.
Yeah.
We kind of flipped this year because usually there's one on my best list that's on your worst list.
10 for me to start my list, Carousel 2. I think that I remember the first one I liked a lot better, but this one was still good, a fun ride that I'd recommend. Number 9, a movie that I come back and thinking, wow, maybe I should have ranked this one higher than I did. It is The History of Future Folk. Just absolutely loved that movie and would watch it again in a heartbeat. So maybe a 4 is too low for it. Number 8, Lamageddon. I enjoyed the cheap slasher trilogy that we did. That was a lot of fun, actually. 7, Cloud Atlas. Number 6, one of the funniest movies we've done in a long time, I think. A movie where I was literally falling out of my chair laughing. Dirty Work, Norm Macdonald. The scene with Rickles and some of Artie Lang's work, I literally was trying to stay in my chair. Now we're into my fives. A Band Called Death. Nowhere In. One of the most fun B movies that we've done, just of all time, I would say, The Miami Connection. And then another brilliant comedy, Young Frankenstein. And of course, Network. Yeah. I mean, what more can you say about Network?
And finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 1976, Bloodsucking Freaks. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Before we get to that, I wanted to mention Dune. I did have a chance to see Dune last Friday. Highly recommend it. If you're familiar, forget the Lynch version. I'd say forget the Sci-Fi Channel version.
You know, you are the only person I've heard talk about the Sci-Fi Channel version,
which I love is
really
Dune.
Weird. Everybody I've read forgot the book. About that one.
I read the book back in the 90s, so I love Dune.
I made it further into the series than a lot of people should have made it to, because it gets off the rails after maybe 5 or 6.
Denis Villeneuve.
I made it to about 8 or 9.
The director, Denis Villeneuve, trimmed it down to just the necessities. He cut a lot, but it works really well. Also, just be ready because the movie that's out now is just part one. It's the first half of the story.
Right. And I guess that's why I was hesitant to see it because, you know, just.
Well, I found out.
That Lord of the Rings, you know, where it's just like, is that the ending here?
Yesterday, I think it was that part two has been greenlit.
Yeah.
They filmed and released part one before part two was greenlit. That was very risky. But fortunately, we will be getting part two in, I think, 23. So, anyway, check that out on to Bloodsucking Freaks. And, of course, the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by Sardou's Theater of the Macabre. Putting the porn in torture porn since 1976.
And also so brought to you by Dayglow Blood for that super realistic and bright effect we all know blood to have. I think I had that paint when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. That it was kind of what's that shade of pink called that they were using there? Was it fuchsia? I don't know.
Yeah, it looked fuchsia. It was kind of fuchsia, fire engine red, somewhere in there.
They were different shades they used in different occasions, but there for something like, I think it was the scene with the foot, it was just that paint that I had as a kid.
Probably. Fiesta Red for the guitar players. It's a Fender custom color.
Alright, so we have a you can't call them a theater company. Well, I guess you could just say we have a white slavery ring and I don't even know if it's really a white slavery ring because it seemed like he was just shipping people off to be torture victims more than anything else.
But they do use that phrase in the film. So.
They do. They do use it. I think it might have been just what he was telling the cop because it was better than the real thing.
Oh, yeah.
If he was a mass murderer,
right.
The cop probably wouldn't have just been like, oh yeah, can you give me 50 grand? But I'm getting ahead of myself. We have this, well, I guess it's this sadist who's running a theater and very thinly disguising his hobbies for art, does this very on-the-nose explanation of if you can't just do sadism on its own. It has to be coupled with a thinly veiled story and maybe some music. It was almost like this Austin Powers wink to the camera as he was explaining it. And well, he decides he's going to, well, he gets a theater critic who is who comes to see his show, and they make believe that they are just it's some sort of illusion, or maybe it's not. He's being very ambiguous about it to the audience. And the known theater critic, who for some reason decided to go see it, maybe just out of morbid curiosity, or maybe he liked it more than he liked to admit, is there and tells him off that his work isn't art, it's crap, and I guess he gets this idea for revenge to kidnap the critic and then to chain him up, of course, and to. He also had a ballerina there with her football-playing boyfriend, and he decides, I guess, whatever things are in front of him, he just decides to do. He decides to kidnap her as well. And he, of course, has this brilliant idea for a ballet, theatrical thing.
The football player was heckling him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's saying, this is all fake, and, he said, would you like to wager your girlfriend on that? Bring her up on stage. And I think that kind of gave him the idea to, kidnap the ballerina for revenge.
Right. Right. Okay, yeah, that's right. And so he just goes to this demonstration of torturing the servants or victims that he has in hand. There's a doctor brought into the middle of it. And in exchange, he's allowed to pretty much torture, mutilate, and kill this one of the other servants. And then he finally breaks the ballerina. She's on board with it and goes through her dance so much and pretty much takes it to the nth degree, killing the critic on stage. And meanwhile, her boyfriend has contacted the police to. Maybe it would have been better if it was a private eye instead of a cop. I don't know. But he winds up getting this cop to come and investigate.
It was 70s New York. I don't know if it made that much of a difference.
That's true. That's true. I don't know. And he decides to go through to watch the show rather than bust things up. I mean, he could have taken the 50 grand and went, but the cop saw that he most likely had a lot more money, so he wanted to let things play out and get all the money for himself. And instead...
Big mistake.
Hilarity ensues.
Now, this was shot under the title of Sardou, Master of the Screaming Virgins. they're retitled for the theatrical run to The Incredible Torture Show. Then Troma bought it, retitled the film Bloodsucking Freaks upon their acquisition in 81. Troma initially made cuts in hopes of getting an R rating, but eventually released the version that had all of the most graphic scenes included, but labeled it R despite having no actual official designation. The MPAA sued Troma for copyright infringement for applying the R without permission. Troma withdrew the R. To date, the MPAA has refused to review the film, leaving it as one of the most controversial non-rated films of all time.
Interesting. I was thinking this had to have played in, like, you know, X-rated theater kind of places, which probably a lot of those locations were very close to where this thing was filmed.
Where at least where it was set, yeah.
So think of how strange that must have been to go to movies and see, like, hey, wait a minute. That's the police station we passed by outside.
Now, you obviously put it on your worst list.
Yes.
And revealed your rating early. I had to wonder if the degree to which this film amused me makes me a monster. I just had a really good time with it. Loved the really dramatic opening music. It doesn't waste time. Like, less than 4 minutes in, we have a nude woman being tortured on stage.
Oh, of course. That's literally the entire point of this whole thing.
And Sartu admits to it on stage. Yes. The audience just doesn't believe him, which I think they were trying to make a point with.
I think I would have liked it if they had it. They had ambiguity for longer, whether it was real or not. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, obviously it was going to be real in the end. But I think that would have been more interesting if it was like, wait a minute, is he really doing this to them or not, kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would have probably improved it.
Showing us the behind the scenes of, yeah, of course he's doing this, and you know, this is his thing, was kind of like
I did get a kick out of the fact that even though the gore was supposed to be real, the audience didn't believe it, and it was just ridiculously fake looking.
Of course.
Which kind of puts you in the audience's perspective. Loved the critic initially telling off Sardu. Just ripping into him. And my favorite part of the movie, Ralphus. The little person. His tattoo. His little person assistant.
Yes.
Who was just doing all of these horrible things. Just incredibly gleefully, like dancing and laughing.
And, you know, kind of excitedly jumping.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of jumping excitedly.
Yes. Now, there is a scene where Sardu is eating dinner off of a woman's back while a candle is, you know, dripping down her ass.
Yes.
There are people who would pay for that, who would pay to be the table.
Yes, that is a thing, of course.
You know. So, like, a lot of this doesn't go that far. I mean, obviously, the actual, you know, dismembering and killing, yeah.
Right. And, yeah, I think if they had just played a little, you know, you know, at least let there be some sort of mystery. Because when you're, like, 15, 20 minutes into this, it's kind of like, all right, we get it all.
I just got a kick out of the wink. That it all has. Because there is a big wink to camera for all of this. I had to laugh when Sardu and Ralphus switched roles.
Yes, he moves the key from one side of the belt to the other. And that, I guess, signifies he's...
He's a sub now.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the kidnapping of the art critic in the art gallery, or the critic in the art gallery.
Right. She flashes him, and then, of course, the poison dart.
There's a woman in a you know long black coat. She flashes him, and then Ralphus pops out from the door and you know hits him with a blow dart.
His weapon of choice.
Now, there was one line that I remembered from this film. You were expecting it to be one of my titles, but I just couldn't make it work.
Or the quote, you know.
One of the intros, rather. There's a scene where Ralphus is kind of riding this woman like a toy horse. And then Sardu says, when you're done riding her, put her to work in the toilet. Her mouth will make an interesting urinal. We're talking almost 30 years, that line stuck with me. I was back in the day when I would talk about this movie, and this goes back to like when I was really heavily into trauma back in the early to mid 90s. I would describe it as either, you know, depending on your sensibilities, it's either the funniest or most offensive film you've ever seen.
And I just kind of got bored after, like, the first, like, I'd say maybe 20 minutes, and it was just kind of like, this isn't going anywhere, is this?
There's an interesting bit of electronic music when Ralphus is torturing Natasha with the cymbals. That was just kind of this you know, really kind of jarring electronic music playing there. The Doctor was giving me serious Jeffrey Combs vibes.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
and yeah,
in 76,
the Doctor was probably the most uncomfortable part of the film that I wish just didn't happen.
In 76, years before Jeffrey Combs, we were getting a Jeffrey Combs performance. I enjoyed that.
The Doctor scene was where we pretty much went into full Tusk.
Yeah, yeah. Except I feel like Tusk is one of the reasons I hated Tusk. It was a little too self-aware. In a way, like, in that Kevin Smith self-aware, like, that smug self-aware way.
I was going to say, because this movie was very
self-aware. Well, this is very self-aware. That's why I explained a bit more. Because I realized, yeah, that this one is too. Tusk was self-aware in that smug Kevin Smith, I'm trying to give you a lesson kind of a way.
This I can say the same for this, except the torturing in Tusk was like it, you know. There was like the S&M, you know, angle that they were giving in this at the same time, which kind of weird that they would go as far as, you know, dismemberment and stuff and murder. But you know. Maybe it's kind of muddling the message that they were actually trying to give it, which is weird that they had a message, but
I don't know if they necessarily, I mean, it's a morality play a bit,
yeah,
but I don't know if there's a message beyond that. Like, the idea of the audience thinking it's fake when it's real kind of suggests a message, but I don't know what that message would be.
I think they were just trying to explore the S&M world, you know?
I don't know if they needed to bring in the actual, you know, illegal shit, you know, the dismembering and the killing, if they're just exploring S&M, because...
Right. It's kind of weird that they would do both at the same time.
What are you guys doing? I was a little uncomfortable with that, about certain aspects of it in that sense. But I don't think it was. They were saying that S&M is akin to murder or dismembering.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's where they were trying. What they were trying to say either. But I could see someone in 76 sure as fuck thinking that.
Yeah, fair. One of the better self-aware moments, speaking of the Doctor, the brain-sucking scene. Drills a hole in this woman's head, puts in a straw, sucks out the fluid. They cut to Ralphus, and in that moment, Ralphus is all of us.
Yeah.
He just has this thoroughly disgusted look on his face. And then we get to the other part that I remembered, the dart scene.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a simple gag, but it's so memorable. Ralphus and Sardu are having a discussion while playing darts. The last dart is a bullseye. The camera pans around. The dartboard is a woman's ass with a bullseye painted on it. There's this ridiculous sound effect when he's pulling the darts out.
Right. And some more. That was more of like straight up red blood, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That was more of the fire engine red.
The caning / guillotine scene could be the most twisted thing we've ever seen in a movie we've reviewed.
I don't know. We've seen a lot of dicks being eaten this year.
Fair. Also, the playing backgammon for severed fingers.
Yeah, that was just...
and then everything they do on camera, but when they you know, when Rufus goes after the rival ballerina with the chainsaw, that they do off camera.
Right.
Maybe a budgetary thing. The one gag that actually made me seriously laugh out loud. Ralphus used to be represented by William Morris.
That was a good one. My favorite joke was Tucci, the cop, mirandizing the assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At reading from the card and everything.
I think the reveal that Sardou had actually fully dominated the dancer Natasha was a nice twist.
The ending itself was a nice little twist.
Also loved the line about how the cop wanted to be a dancer.
Right.
I had a Chasing Amy flashback there. Now, initially I was wondering how he fit 100K into a single envelope.
I thought it was 50.
No, Sardou offered 50. The cop talked him up to 100K.
Oh, okay.
And he hands us this thin envelope. Turns out there were silver certificates, which were something that was done up until the mid-60s. I didn't really fully understand it.
Huh.
Now, of course, Natasha dances like an actress who did a week of ballet classes. And she's supposed to be this, you know, prima ballerina.
But wait, back to the money, of course. What idiot puts the money in the cage of the...
Well, they're feral. The women in the cage were feral, so
right.
You know, he could only get to it with a whip. It was safe from anybody else. And because they were feral, they didn't care about it. The fried eyeballs I got a kick out of that Rufus was cooking, they looked utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
Also, when Natasha kills Tom, the football player, she just taps him on the back of the head with a hammer. And he spits there were out a blood lot of, and goes down.
There were a lot of selling, you know, death scenes where, you know, it was so not really coordinated. More safety than the Rust set, though.
Too soon.
Okay.
I gotta say, that was the most interesting hot dog I've ever seen.
I'm like, is that what I think that is?
Yeah. They make damn sure you know what that is in the last shot.
did we end the as we not as we began, but as we had like two different movies earlier in the year? It's our third one of the year.
What were the other two?
I'm trying to remember. How can I forget this now? Was it the pinata? I know is one of them.
Okay, yeah, right.
But there was another one, too, and I cannot remember which one. We had, like, two.
Okay. Huh.
Two dicks, now three.
Now, the violent deaths of lead actors Seamus O'Brien, Sardou, who was stabbed to death in his apartment by a burglar, and Vidhu Krem, who played Natasha, who was shot on a hunting trip after the film's release, also added to its notoriety. So, shortly...
I did not know that's how she died. I saw she died young.
Yeah. And they both died very shortly after the film was released, which is a bit creepy. To it. Sequels and remakes?
Sequels and remakes.
I would like to see Rob Zombie take a shot at this.
I think this has been done to death between the saws, the tusks.
Fair.
I mean, it's just...
I think Zombie could, you know... get the right tone for it. On to Brains.
On to Brains.
I can in good conscience recommend it, but I had a good time, so 3.5.
I'm giving it a 1. You know, the ladies, the weird ending that is just, I mean, you expected evil to triumph, but instead you get pretty much total anarchy, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. And what have you learned?
I'm not really sure how I really made it to the end of this, actually.
And I learned that the public cannot digest eroticism alone. And that's it for Bloodsucking Freaks until next year, when we'll be revealing something we haven't decided yet. We had a bit of an argument before the show about it. You're convinced that it's going to be a tribute episode.
It's going to be a tribute episode.
And, you know... That's a distinct possibility, but you know, if not, I want to do something big. So, like, we always like to start the year big. So we'll figure that out, you know, when the time comes.
Insert late actor or actress here.
We'll be back in first week of February. We're taking a few months off because I have literally had the worst year of my life, and I need a break. And until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.